Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, a look at this week in the Capitol. But first, Wiss, I was there. I asked the DNR's Kevin Wallenfang to preview the deer hunt that begins at dawn tomorrow. A father offers emotional testimony in the Capitol debate over when and how to restrain public school students. The founder of United Against Hate talks about how the news media reports some terrorist attacks at the Madison Rotary. Republican legislators disagree on a bill letting pharmacists dispense contraceptives. And the governor says he may call a second special session on guns, but not today. Wiss, I was there.
Crossbows are becoming more and more popular. Fewer people using traditional archery equipment is reduced. You know, we're still killing a lot of deer in Wisconsin, but when those deer are being killed is changing.
Prescription drug prices are simply out of control. It's really important that we get all of the key stakeholders around the table to have a discussion to find real solutions. And that's really what this meeting was about today and what the work of this task force is going to be about going forward.
AB 479 is the one that's before us today, and this will strengthen the process and minimize the amount of stress for elder victims and witnesses ages 60 years and older who are involved in court proceedings by allowing for expedited hearings and the ability to preserve testimony through a videotaped court hearing. Additionally, the bill allows the recorded testimony to be admissible to all subsequent court proceedings.
One of the amendments I would like you to make is the removal or rejection of a teacher's license if they illegally restrain a student. My daughter was ripped out of a bathroom against her will for not peeing fast enough. There has to be some consequence from the state of Wisconsin for the abuse of a disabled individual.
If a Muslim is a terrorist, what do they call right away in the media, mainstream media? They call him Muslim terrorist. When you tie something with the religion, it makes everybody nervous that all Muslims living in this country are terrorists.
Who is asking for this bill? We share part of a district, and I'm not hearing about this from women. I'm not hearing about this from pharmacists.
We don't recommend annual mammograms anymore. We don't recommend annual pap smears anymore. So the necessity to see a doctor for a prescription is not the same as what the medical society had said years before. The rural communities are asking for this. The inner city communities are asking for this. Young women are asking for this. Women of reproductive age that want to plan their families.
I continue to hold that that option open, but I don't have, won't be making a decision today.
Ron Johnson, the U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, the Republican, I think he's our senior senator, mm-hmm. is in the middle of all these controversies in Washington. Let's just three examples. What he said last week, I think on Meet the Press, on Trump's call to the president of Ukraine, that exposed things that didn't need to be exposed. It's going to be very difficult for future presidents to have a candid conversation with a world leader. Attacking the witness, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, a significant number of bureaucrats and staff members within the executive branch have never accepted President Trump. It is entirely possible that Vindman fits his profile. Finally, should we ban flavored e-cigarettes? No, the Senator Johnson wrote, the ban could have a devastating effect on the e-cigarette industry and force many small businesses to shut down. He also said at one point, they're not going to call me as a witness in the U.S. House Committee on Impeachment. Mm-hmm. Why is he so high profile, and what's the potential impact?
Don't forget his roles, the various committees that he sits on. He happens to be a witness to everything that's going on, basically. Remember, there was an interview with the Wall Street Journal said a month and a half ago, which he said he first heard about the allegations that the aid was tied to Ukraine to an investigation of the Bidens.
And he asked
winced.
The president? Yep.
He asked the president, who used an expletive, and said, no way, never asked for that. Johnson's emerged as this kind of like really interesting figure in this whole thing because he was there. Also, he's walking this kind of line between being a passionate defender of the president and going down the rabbit hole of conspiracy theories. Now, I don't mean to dismiss the various theories that are out there, but just in testimony this week, I think her name is Fiona Hill, one of the people testifying for the House impeachment proceedings, talked about the allegation that Ukraine was really the one interfering in the 2016 election. So that is basically false.
Yeah.
False narrative.
That's the way she opened her statement. Please, Republicans, don't buy this.
It helps Russia. Johnson has pursued to ask questions about this, raise questions about what the country's role was. He feels like, and he said this, that there was a sort of effort from the start to undermine the president and put him through something that he's never seen before with a president. Now, to the Johnson's defenders, he's a truth teller.
Yes.
Let's be honest. You know, Johnson is a unique figure in Wisconsin politics because he came from the private sector. Don't forget his rapid rise. In the spring of 2010, he wasn't talked about as a candidate for U.S. Senate. I first heard his name, I can't remember what month it was, but he spoke at a Tea Party rally, and all of a sudden this like momentum took off, right? And
Charlie Sykes floated his name.
He got this great momentum, ran a great race in 2010. When I bring that up is that he's not somebody who has like patience for the normal politicking. He's not known for having kind of an appreciation or of the normal way of doing things. He's an impatient man. Let's get this done. Let's get this fixed. Let's go. And you see that coming through the way he approaches these things. He sees impeachment, people tell me, as an unnecessary distraction that is hurting the country. He's got no patience. Let's get this out of here. This is dumb. Let's go.
Okay.
It's just the way he kind of is.
Okay, but I want to P.S. The Charles Franklin poll that was released this week, which we're going to get into as our next topic. It said, do you approve of the job being done by Ron Johnson and Senator Tammy Baldwin? They both came in at 39%. So does that suggest to you Ron Johnson is not incurring any downside or backlash?
No. Here are a couple of things. One, it was 39-29 for Johnson, 39-43 for Baldwin, I think. Look, there's a phenomenon when you're a U.S. senator that the farther you get away from your election, the less people remember who you are. It's just kind of a weird thing. Baldwin's election was a year ago. Johnson's was 2016, so he's getting farther away. So that's part of what's probably happening. If he runs again in 2022, this stuff will come up and people will be reminded of it. It might inspire Republicans and inflame Democrats. We just don't know. But senators just aren't that high profile. I know it sounds odd, but people just don't. I mean, part of it is we don't have a huge contingent of media in Washington, D.C. covering the Senate delegation, the congressional delegation on a daily basis. I mean, we do it from here, but we're how many hundreds of miles away from D.C.? You can't really do that day-to-day grind of like, right, everything, get him on camera or get him in a soundbite.
Right.
There's just less attention for those guys.
Well, and it was interesting because the senator said we ought not ban flavored e-cigarettes, but there was testimony just last week from a state official on how much harm vaping does to Wisconsin teenagers. Let's play that video, please.
What we see in the delightful black line is that over time, use of combustible cigarettes is going down. What we're seeing in the highly disturbing red line is that youth use of e-cigarettes is skyrocketing. 1 in 5 Wisconsin high school students has used an e-cigarette in the last 30 days. And when you talk to them about how much they're using, a third of them are using every day. These things are going to rewire your brain. It's going to increase your risk of impulsivity, which is the last thing adolescents need. It's also going to increase their risk for mood disorders. It's going to cause problems with learning and memory. And then there's the risk of becoming dependent. Why? Because there's been an upregulation, an increase in the number of nicotine receptors in their brain, and those don't go away. And when those receptors are empty, they're screaming for nicotine. They are fiending. They are desperate for a hit off of any source of nicotine. And that's a significant problem.
As we talked about, the Charles Franklin Marquette poll was just released. I'm going to talk about three elements of it. The first, a slight shift against impeachment. In November, you're talking about 801 registered voters. Mm-hmm. Most recent poll, 40% said yes, 53% said no. That's a drop of 4 percentage points on the yes and a small change on the no. Significant?
Yes and no.
Because the margin of error there is 4.1%. Excuse me.
What Charles pointed out was that in this poll, what he's seeing is Republicans rallying around the president and Dems being a little more wishy-washy about what's going on, both with impeachment and with the head-to-head presidential race. So that's what's driving this. I had people this week raise the correlation to the impeachment, or sorry, the recall process with Walker in 2012.
Oh.
People didn't like what Walker did with Act 10, but when it came time to vote on it, they're like, you know, he didn't do anything illegal, so I don't really like this idea of removing him from office for a policy decision. Now, this is obviously different because we're talking impeachment and possibly something illegal,
mm-hmm.
but there's a same vibe for some people of, okay, they feel like this is, there's an election in a year. Why do this now? Why not let the election play out, have the ultimate decision be at the ballot box next fall? So that could be driving it. Now, you also have to add the caveat, it's one poll. So you can't say it's a predictor, it's a snapshot in time.
Right.
It could be an off sample, you never know. But the trend has moved in Trump's direction, both on impeachment and the head-to-head since August.
Well, the second thing I want to talk about from the poll is now that Mayor Pete Buttigieg is leading in Iowa, let's talk about the head-to-heads from the Charles Rankin poll, Trump versus Biden. He beats all four of these top Democrats.
Well, beats in quotation marks because within the margin of error.
Thank you very much. But keeping that margin of error, 4.1%, 47-44 over Biden, 48-45 over Sanders, 48-43 over Senator Warren, 47-39 over Buttigieg. Because they're all within the margin of error.
Well, Mayor Pete, that's statistically significant, we would call it back when I was at the Associated Press. But yes.
Why? Because he's the flavor of the month?
Because
he's winning
eight points. That's 8 points.
Outside the margin of error. Thanks.
So that's a different story. But again, the trend is what you want to watch. And the trend is moving in Trump's direction. Now the question is, where are we going to be at in 12 months? I have no idea. I would never predict where we're going to be. But now the question has become, is there a danger for Democrats that this is going to backfire with the impeachment process? We have gotten so far down the road with it. I don't know they can pull back and say, okay, forget about everybody, because there was damaging testimony all week in the open hearings about what happened. Now, the Republican effort has been to undermine that, saying there's no direct connection, the president directly saying,
the military
you must
paid,
do this,
yes.
All this stuff, trying to pick it apart. We're going to have a trial in the Senate, apparently, now, so it's going to be interesting to watch. But the question is what's happening in D.C. going to move these numbers? And anyway, I asked some people this week, okay, all this damaging testimony, the bombshells we heard this week, will that change people's minds? And the answer I got back was maybe not, because people are so locked in about how they feel about Trump, pro or con, that they're not sure that anything they hear out of D.C. is going to trickle down to Main Street versus K Street.
Okay, the third element from the poll that I want to ask you about is something I found in your newsletter that I missed when I first read the poll. Governor Evers' approval rating, October, 52% approved, 34% disapproved. Now, that's an 18 percentage point difference.
Pretty good numbers.
November, the most recent poll, 47% approve, 42% disapprove. So you closed, the gap was closed from 18 percentage points to 5. Why?
I asked people this week all about that. Couple things I heard back. One, whenever you see movement that big, first question is, okay, what happened to the sample? Something different going on? Is it a bad sample? Charles Franklin said during the presentation, the partisan leanings were in line with what has been recently. Also, that it was the same exact partisan makeup as the last poll on the numbers, so that didn't change. But when I asked people, like, what would have changed with Evers, it came back, well, the honeymoon is over, essentially. You know, each governor, each president gets a honeymoon period after election where they get the benefit of the doubt. It looks like partisans are retracting to their partisan corners and saying, okay, this guy's a Democrat, I'm a Republican, I'm not that big a fan, and doing a deeper dive in the crosstabs, and the margin of error gets higher, you know, these subgroups and what it is for the overall sample. But men went from, I think, like 50% approval, 35% disapproval of his job performance in October. He's now upside down with men overall. Republican opposition hardened to Evers from October to November. Again, we're talking bigger margins of error, but we're seeing a shift in which the governor, and we talked this last week with the whole thing about the salty language about the DATCAP secretary being fired, about all these things, that if he's viewed as a partisan, through a partisan lens, he's less the nice guy that everybody kind of likes, and he's, you know, oh, that kind of grandfatherly uncle, great uncle type view of a nice guy. Maybe people see him now as a partisan.
Okay, so there was a pretty significant shift in the job approval for Evers. But when the same question was asked about the ledge, the shift was only like 2 or 3 points.
Yeah, slight. And another thing that, you know, reminds me every day that what we do here is not necessarily breaking through to the people at home. Asked about the whole controversy about the DATCAP secretary, about firing Brad Paff, It's the right thing to do, wrong thing to do. Half of those polls, they didn't learn anything about the entire thing. Of those who had, so no, half.
Half. News to them. News to me.
I hadn't heard
Brad
anything about
Pfaff
it.
Is who? Okay.
Slightly more thought the wrong thing to do than the right thing to do. But half didn't know anything about it, which Franklin pointed out shows you that percolates in the Capitol.
Yes.
That's why his breakthrough back home. Now, that also raises the question, what drives then the partisan view of Evers? Because if that was such a bad thing, right, the language of it, or if it was a thing that made him sympathetic, the governor, because these guys, the Republicans, you know, beat up on his secretaries, if they don't know about it, how could that have driven the numbers? So what changed for him? Yeah. I know Robin Voss on Twitter raised the prospect that it was the special session on guns, but we know that the background checks are very popular, so 100%. I don't know if there's causation there.
Yeah.
It could be a combination of things. It could be the president and his number. I mean, it could be lots of stuff.
Okay, next topic. There's an April election for the state Supreme Court. Justice Daniel Kelly would like to win a 10-year term. The first debate was very interesting because it sets a tone that we're going to hear from now until the April election. Please.
We have a justice on the Supreme Court who has been supported by right-wing special interests, who has continued to receive outside the support of those groups. And every single time when he has made a decision on the Supreme Court, he has made that decision in favor of those exact same groups. And I don't know how it's possible that the law could always be on their side.
Every time that I decide a case, every time that I write an opinion, as I've been doing since 2016, I exercise a particular methodology in doing that. I start with the law that applies to the case. Those are the premises. And then you use rigorous logic to move from those premises down to the conclusion. And when you get done and you can see an unbroken chain of logic, that's your guarantee that the law mandated the outcome and not anyone's personal politics or preferences. So unlike Judge Karofsky, I don't judge the result of a case according to a political lens. I judge it according to what the law requires.
You know, there's too much talk already about politics here. And this is not about our state Supreme Court being a bauble and seats being prizes to be won by one political party or the other. We need to get back to a Supreme Court that we used to have that's independent and that works for all the people of Wisconsin. I bring that different perspective, and I will break through this partisan fight.
Okay, let's talk about the players. Mm-hmm. Justice Kelly was appointed to the bench, I think, in 2015 by Governor Walker. 2016. Thank you for the correction. Judge Jill Karofsky was elected in 2017. I think I got that year right. And then she formerly headed the Department of Justice Office of Crime Victim Services. Professor Fallone, he's a law school professor at Marquette, ran for the court in 2013 against Roganzak?
Yes.
Thank you. That video clip pretty much said it all. Is this mm-hmm. what we're going to hear for the next few months?
Probably. look, what I'm really watching with this race is there a presidential primary still going on for Democrats in April of 2020? And this is why I say that. February is the primary. We kind of assume Kelly will get through because he's the only conservative in the race. So the conservatives would rally around him, right? Then the question becomes on the progressive side, Karofsky and Fallone, which one do you like better? Karofsky, some progressives will tell you, they won with Dalit in 2018, Rebecca Dalit, female judge, former prosecutor. I like that profile. Karofsky has it. Fallone, he's from Milwaukee. Does that help him with a Milwaukee turnout? Got to watch that. There'll be primaries for county executive in Milwaukee
yes.
and mayor.
Yes.
So that might maybe help him a little bit. Watch for that. But anyway, whoever gets through, Karofsky or Fallone, if there's a primary for president on the Democratic side and not the Republican side in April, that gives them quite a leg up. And this is why. This past spring, now Justice Brian Hagedorn, in an open seat on the state Supreme Court, had a surge of conservative support in the final weeks. He got 606,000 votes. In 2016, the primary for president on the Democratic side, 1 million people cast votes. Okay? If we see 1 million people turn out the primary for president on the Democratic side, in April, how do you get from the surge to Hagedorn to 1 million
yeah.
without a primary for president on your side of the ballot.
Those are big numbers. 1 million?
Right? Yeah. Now, in 2016, 1.1 million Republicans voted in the primary for president, 1 million Democrats. Rebecca Bradley won with 1 million votes. The conservative, Joanne Kloppenburg, finished second with 900,000 and change. That shows you that those primaries drove turnout on both sides in that Supreme Court race. That's the challenge for Hagedorn. Can conservatives, or sorry, for Kelly, if
Kelly,
he gets through,
Kelly.
Can conservatives in the Republican Party use the spring election as their kind of tune-up for the fall of 2020 and drive turnout from 606,000 to 1 million? Maybe, but that is a tough task. The flip side is, if somebody catches fire, pick your Democrat, whoever you want, flavor of the week, in the latest poll out of Iowa and Hampshire, if that person catches fire and comes Super Tuesday in March, wraps up for the nomination, then we have a different dynamic.
Yeah, we do.
Come April.
For the April. Yeah, that's right.
Which is also part of why Governor Evers avoided putting the 7th Congressional District on the April ballot, because if that primary for president peters out and you have a Republican-leaning congressional seat on the ballot, same time Supreme Court race, that would give Republicans more reason to turn out that day.
Good points. Okay, next subject. New friction between the executive branch and the legislative branch, because last week, co-chair of Joint Finance, Representative John Nygren out of Marinette, filed suit against the governor, filed an open record suit. Now, let's just go through that. He had sought July 2 through August 2 correspondence communications from the governor's office on 9 topics. 4 of the topics dealt with $100,000 in potential funding for a mental health program for farmers. But he also asked the governor's office for correspondence about himself and 4 other legislative leaders. The governor's lawyer officially denied it, saying it was too broad, not reasonably limited, saying it covered everyone in the governor's office. But Representative Nygren, Governor Evers is not above the law. New low point between the executive and legislative branch, Jared?
I don't know. They're all low points anymore, it seems like.
Well, can you remember a similar suit given our few decades covering the Capitol?
I don't know.
I'm sorry, that's
tangent. But in this instance, Nygren said that DATCAP gave him the records he asked for, but the governor's office denied it. So that's kind of an interesting twist to the story. Don't forget that Joint Finance, which Nygren's a part of, had a provision they want to put in the budget back, it was at 2015, to shield lawmakers' records from the open records law.
Yes.
That was pulled out.
Which is ironic, because Nygren is now seeking records in the governor's office that would have been secret under the change of the open records law that Nygren and Darling and Voss and Fitzgerald and Governor Walker pushed for it at the last minute in the 2015 budget, correct?
Walker backed off, said, hey, this is not cool, and they kind of, when Walker started kind of brief, if I remember correctly, and I don't remember the records covered by that provision applied in the governor's office or just legislative branch.
I believe it would have applied the governor's office.
So I'll defer to you in that one. But Evers is also getting beat up on open records because of a week ago, we had a story about a Milwaukee TV station asked for one single day of Governor Evers' emails, and he said, oh, well, I might maybe send one a day of that. It can't be very interesting. His office said no.
Boring, yeah.
So he's getting beat up on open records, and here you have another one where we're saying, look, we asked for this stuff. You wouldn't give it to us, but DATCAP would. How come?
Okay. Well, that's just a very interesting that the chairman, co-chair of Joint Finance, has got to sue the governor. Okay. There was an expansion last week announced, and this was funded through the 2019-2021 budget in the Drug Courts and Treatment Alternatives program. And I just want to read what the Treatment and Diversion Program is, just a couple sentences. TAD, Treatment and Diversion, provides local jurisdictions with options to give nonviolent offenders an opportunity to enter diversion programs or treatment court programs as a safe alternative to jail or prison. These options typically involve drug and or alcohol abuse treatment. What was announced last week? The funding, $1.4 million announced last week, will create drug and OWI courts in Door, Lafayette, and Shawnee counties. Will help pay for the Ho-Chunk Nation's Wellness Court, and will expand treatment alternatives and diversion programs in 7 counties. Now, the significance here is this continues a trend of Wisconsin creating drug courts, OWI courts, and the treatment alternative diversion program, which now goes, which now operates in 3 tribes, 53 counties. Okay, I'm a wonk. Any PS on that, JR?
When I got here originally, covered the Capitol, it was right after Truth in Sentencing was approved. Look at the change in the approach to drug and alcohol offenses from 2000 to 2019 and what's going on right now.
Okay.
There's a recognition that there needs to be a treatment of the cause of a lot of these crimes, especially when they involve alcohol and drugs.
Okay, and here's what the Attorney General and Governor said about this expansion last week. Please.
This is a problem that doesn't observe county lines and it doesn't observe state lines. The opioid epidemic is the most significant public safety challenge that we face right now, and making sure that we address it throughout the state is a way that we can slow the supply of drugs to Wisconsin.
These treatment programs can save lives, but they also can open the door for future opportunities and success stories for those who are gripped by addiction. By diverting nonviolent offenders into treatment programs, we can get folks the help they need, and connecting the dots for success across the state. A University of Wisconsin study found that for every $1 spent on TAD, it saves the criminal justice system $2. These are great bipartisan steps forward to tackle the opioid and meth epidemics we're seeing in our communities across the great state of Wisconsin. But it also moves our state closer to a more compassion and common sense approach to criminal justice, which is so desperately needed.
There are now three announced candidates for the county executive office in Milwaukee, given the retirement of Chris Abley. We knew about David Crowley, Senator Chris Larson announced, and a native, a woman born in India, Pranam Math, has announced. You expect many more to get into this?
One thing I'm waiting on is Jim Sullivan, former state senator, former aide, worked in Abley's administration.
Brian Kennedy.
We're kind of watching. Brian Kennedy has announced. So it's going to be an interesting field to watch. The big thing we talked about before is where does the Abley money go in that primary? There's a perception that if Jim Sullivan gets in, that Abley might back him. If not Sullivan, Crowley might be there. Good bet he won't help Chris Larson, who ran against Abley last time.
And just for clarification, has Brian Kennedy announced?
I believe he has.
Okay. I had a question about that. Your stock reports, rising.
Josh Call, so announced this week that DOJ has got through testing rape kits. Look, in the short term, I don't know this is going to be a big thing for Josh Call because the AG's office is overshadowed by everybody else. You kind of get more known for your mistakes than your successes. But Call's believed to have aspirations for higher office down the road. It helps to be able to check off on your list. I clean up the backlog. Yes. Just don't have it come back, Josh Call, because that becomes a problem.
True.
But, hey, kudos, I got it done.
And we had said he was on track to complete this backlog, so this is now the formal
And the effort to clean it up began under Brad Schimmel, his Republican predecessor, and it hurt Brad Schimmel that this thing was there in the campaign last year.
And I think we cleaned him up with the aid of, I think, $1.7 million federal grant. Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got to move on. Next.
Tom Barrett fully announced re-election bid this week. Look, he's in pretty strong position. He's got a money advantage. He's getting his fifth term. The DNC is coming to town for the convention. The question with Barrett always seems to be, do you want it badly enough? And have you taken advantage of the opportunity you've had as mayor to really make a change? Yeah, downtown is booming. There's a new Bucks arena. But the north side is not seeing the same kind of ripple effect that you're seeing around the Bucks arena. So some challenges for him, but can Lena Taylor or Tony Zielinski, Lena state senator, Tony a alderman in Milwaukee, can they take advantage of these opportunities to make a case for dumping Mayor Barrett?
That's another one of those February primaries. Okay, mm-hmm. Falling.
Frax Envies, real quickly, a company. Remember the boom we had in western Wisconsin with frac sand mines. We had the best sand around.
Yes.
This process.
Three or four years ago.
Inject sand, water, and chemicals to free natural gas and oil. One company devalued two mines by a combined $215 million recently because what's happening is they're finding new deposits elsewhere closer to where the deposits are of oil and gas. You don't have to transport the Wisconsin sand to the mine. It saves you money. Even though it's not as good quality sand, they found ways to use it to help. Wisconsin's industry could depend upon, I believe, the Appalachian area, North Dakota, another one. But they just found a new deposit in North Dakota of sand. They're trying to check out, can we use this sand for this process? It could further hurt the industry in Wisconsin.
One company wrote down almost $250 million. What's that going to mean for the property tax base in those counties?
No, good
Fascinating.
Question.
Just an announcement. JR are going to be celebrating Thanksgiving with our families. The next Rewind will be in 2 weeks. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm JR Ross.
That's Rewind 4. Let me get the date right. November 22.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.